Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're going to look into the story of the Garda station in Dundalk. Now, I know what you might be thinking, sounds maybe a bit local, but honestly, as we get into it, you'll see there are some really significant national and, well, even international threads here.
That's exactly right. This isn't just about bricks and mortar. It's sort of a window, really, into some key moments in Irish history. We've got this historical account here that details where it came from, how it changed over time, and its role in some pretty pivotal events.
Precisely. So our mission, if you like, is to see how this single police station reflects Ireland's bigger journey, you know, politically, socially, especially around things like border security and conflict. Expect some real aha moments, honestly, seeing how one building can tell such a big story. Okay, so where do we start? Before the Gardaí, what was policing like in Dundalk?
Right, well, before the Gardaí, what was policing like in Dundalk?
Right, well, before An Garda Síochána came along, it was the Royal Irish Constabulary, the RIC. And Dundalk, given its size and where it is, was actually quite important for the RIC. They had several barracks there. Oh, several, not just one. That does suggest it was a key spot even back then.
It definitely was. The records mention RIC barracks on Ann Street. That was their Louth HQ, actually, and also on Clambersill Street and Bridge Street. There's even a nice little detail about a Sergeant Henry Connolly being posted at both Clambersill and Bridge Street barracks. Gives you a little human touch, you know.
Interesting. And can you still see any signs of the RIC in Dundalk today? Anything left?
Well, this account from 2017, it mentioned that the original gates, the wall, and the district inspector's house at the Ann Street site were still standing then. Like a physical link, isn't it? Back to that earlier policing era.
Fascinating. Okay, so then came the massive change, the formation of An Garda Síochána.
Correct. And Garda Síochána, though they were called the Civic Guard at the very start, formed in February 1922. They replaced the RIC after the Irish Free State was established, and they arrived in Dundalk on a specific date, October 31st, 1922.
October 31st. Okay, so what did they do immediately? Set up shop somewhere new.
Not exactly. It was more practical than that. The very next day, November 1st, 1922, the Civic Guard moved straight into the old RIC headquarters on Ann Street, and they used the Bridge Street station a bit later, too.
Okay.
That makes a lot of sense, really. Why build something new when facilities were right there?
Exactly.
I mean, setting up a whole new police force is hard enough, right?
Yeah.
And this was happening during the birth of the Free State and the Civil War. Using what was already there was just, well, it was the sensible thing to do to get boots on the ground quickly.
But wasn't there a gap between the RIC leaving and the Civic Guard arriving? What happened then?
Yes, there was. The RAC officially left Dundalk on March 29th, 1922. So for about 7 months, policing was handled by members of the IRA, the Irish Republican Army, and also what's described as a civilian force.
That sounds potentially quite complicated, maybe a bit unstable.
It definitely suggests a complex situation on the ground during that transition period, you know, reflecting the bigger national picture, something local historians could probably tell us a lot more about. And the Civic Guard, by the way, officially became An Garda Síochána in 1923.
Good to get that clear. So, just to recap those first Garda stations before the main one we know now, Ann Street, the old RIC CHU, they used that first, and Bridge Street, another ex-RIC place used for a while too.
Spot on. And Bridge Street Station closed down eventually after the move to the Crescent, which naturally brings us to the Crescent. It's quite a building, isn't it? What was it originally?
Ah, well, this is where it gets really interesting. That big, imposing building we know as the Garda Station. It started life as the Louth County Jail.
A jail. Wow,
Yeah.
that's a major shift in purpose. When was it actually built?
Construction was mostly in 1853, and it officially opened on January 19th, 1854. The walls around it were built a little earlier, around 1850. It was designed in an Italianate style by John Neville. He was the county surveyor for Louth back then.
Italianate style, right? Explains the look. Must have been a big deal for Dundalk at the time.
Oh, absolutely massive. It cost £23,000, which was apparently £5,000 over budget. So, yeah, a huge undertaking. The main driver was replacing the old Crow Street Jail, which was just too small and overcrowded. That old jail building, incidentally, is now Dundalk Town Hall.
So this new jail, what was the layout like inside?
It was quite a complex. You had the main entrance building, which also had the governor's house in it, then separate wings for male and female prisoners, an infirmary, and a central hall connecting everything. Interestingly, the governor's house part, the bit that's the Garda station now, was built with granite ashlar, you know, that smooth, precisely cut stone. Looks quite formal, but the cell blocks used rubble stone, rougher stuff.
That difference in materials probably says something, doesn't it? About status and function within the jail.
Almost definitely. And the site itself, It has a bit of a grim history even before the jail. It was known locally as Gallows Hill. Apparently, it was used for public executions way back.
Oof. So, a place already linked with law and punishment, just
yeah.
a much harsher kind. Were there any notable prisoners held there later on?
Yes, definitely. During the War of Independence and the Civil War, it held quite a few significant Republican prisoners. We're talking about people like Frank Aiken, the local army barracks is named after him, Austin Stack, Sean Treacy, D'Armuid Lynch, big names. There was also a major hunger strike there in October 1923, about 200 Republican prisoners involved. And tragically, a young man, Thomas Lennon, was executed there by the National Army in January 1923 for having arms. So this building, it's really seen some intense Irish history unfold.
It really has. Witness to some pivotal and often quite tragic moments.
Yeah.
So how did it eventually become a Garda station then?
Well, the jail stopped being used as a prison in 1925. It was then formally closed by a government order in 1931. And then Angarda Síochána took over part of it, specifically that former governor's house section.
And when exactly did that happen?
Most sources say 1945. Though there's a local newspaper report mentioning January 1946, it happened after about 8,000 pounds worth of renovations were done. So this repurposed building became the Dundalk District Garda HQ. And that's when the old Bridge Street Station finally closed its doors. It's quite symbolic, isn't it? A place of incarceration becoming the base for law enforcement in the new state.
It really is, yeah. What about the rest of the old jail complex? Was that repurposed too?
Oh, yes, very much so. It's been woven back into the community in different ways. The men's wing, the northern cell block, that's now the Oriel Center. It's a cultural center run by Cumhata Síochána Éireann, you know, for traditional Irish arts. And interestingly, its basement was done up in 1991 as a national emergency center for Louth Civil Defense.
And the women's wing.
That became the Louth County Archive. Very fitting, really, preserving local history now. The old jail infirmary is the HQ for County Louth Civil Defense. And even the jail yard was used by the county council for storage for years, from about 1945 up to 1991. It's quite amazing how this whole imposing complex got sort of reintegrated, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Now, can we go back to the Garda Station building itself for a moment? The architecture, you said, is quite distinguished.
It is, yeah. As I said, it's detached, 5 bays wide, 2 stories over basement. It has these projecting end bays, which give it a strong look. The main entrance on the east side is set back a bit with a loggia, and there's that noticeable 2-stage tower above it. The stone itself, that gray granite ashlar, plus the raised coins, the cornerstones, and the banding, it all makes it look very solid, very imposing.
Hmm. The historical account we have uses phrases like gray, stark walls reflect the gravity of its function, and talks about skillfully executed rustication. Rustication, for anyone listening, is that technique giving the stone a kind of textured, rougher finish at the base. Sounds like they paid attention to detail.
They certainly did. And it hasn't just stayed static. The source mentions an extension being built onto the north side of the station back in August 2005. We don't have the final details on that, but it shows the building's still adapting, you know, for modern policing needs. Beyond the official history and architecture, buildings like this often pick up local stories, a bit of folklore, anything like that with the old jail.
Oh, there's a classic one.
Mm-hmm.
The story goes that the ghost of the jail's builder haunts the place. Apparently, he was thrown into debtor's prison himself shortly after finishing it. It's almost certainly just a legend, you know, but it's part of the building's story now, how people relate to it. Adds another layer, doesn't it? A reminder of all the human stories inside those walls. Just for clarity, maybe we could quickly run through those key dates again.
Good idea. So, jail built roughly 1845 to 1855, opens January 1854. Used for Republican prisoners, say, 1918 to 1923. Stops being a prison 1925, formally closed 1931. Guardi move into the governor's house part 1945 or 46. Then the wings get repurposed later in the 20th century, that north extension we mentioned being built in 2005, and now it's this multi-use site.
Great, thanks. That really helps track its journey. So let's shift to today. What's its operational role now?
Right, so today, Dundalk Garda Station at the Crescent postcode A91DK46, it's a key 24-hour operational hub for the Garda.
And it's more than just a local station, right? It has a wider remit.
That's right. Dundalk is also the divisional headquarters for the entire Love Cabin Monaghan Garda Division. But it's important to say, the actual HQ admin offices aren't in the Crescent building itself. They're in a separate place, the Millennium Center, also in Dundalk.
Oh, that's interesting. Any idea why they'd separate the operational station from the admin HQ?
Well, it's just speculation, obviously, but you could guess a few reasons. Maybe the historic building at the Crescent, great as it is, just doesn't have the space, or maybe the modern setup needed for a big administrative HQ, perhaps separating them, lets them have a purpose-built admin center while keeping the visible historic station at the Crescent for operations and community stuff.
That seems pretty logical. And how does the Crescent Station connect with the local community specifically?
It's designated under the Louth North Community Engagement Area, so there's a real focus on community policing, community safety partnerships, which makes sense, doesn't it? Especially crucial in a border town like Dundalk.
Mm-hmm. And the leadership structure there, who's in charge?
Well, the overall division is led by Chief Superintendent Alan McGovern. But based at the Crescent, you have superintendents looking after different areas. Charles Armstrong handles community engagement. Ronan Carey has other operational roles. Gordon Englishby is the detective superintendent, so crime focus. And there's also an assistant principal for business services, Miss Rosemary Conboy. So it shows, you know, the range of functions managed out of Dundalk.
Yeah. Sounds like a major hub covering a lot of ground.
Yeah.
And the day-to-day work would be the standard guard of duties, I suppose.
Exactly. Crime prevention, detection, dealing with drugs, traffic, state security matters, and all that community policing work we mentioned. And always worth remembering, of course, that uniform guardai in Ireland are typically unarmed. That's a key aspect of their policing model. Okay, now let's turn to some of the tougher parts of its history. The significant events and challenges, particularly because of where Dundalk is.
Yes. Its location, right near the border, has just inevitably shaped its history, especially during the Troubles. The impact was, well, profound.
How did the Troubles affect the Garda station itself? Were there direct incidents?
Oh, yes. One really dramatic one was a mob attack on the station in September 1972. Local accounts apparently called it the most serious rioting since the Civil War. A large crowd attacked the Crescent station, tried to set it on fire, shots were fired. It only calmed down when the defense forces arrived and used tear gas. Must have been terrifying for everyone there.
Sounds incredibly serious. Do we know what triggered that specific attack?
Well, later on, some people suggested a possible link to the Littlejohn brothers. They were controversial figures operating in the area then, claiming links to British intelligence.
Weren't they the ones involved in firebombing Garda stations nearby, like Castle Bellingham and Louth Village that same month?
The very same. And there were even claims, though disputed, that the Littlejohns were told to, quote, stage a riot in Dundalk. Oh, it points to a really volatile time, potentially with efforts to destabilize the border region. A very dangerous environment for the Garda in Dundalk back then.
Absolutely. Then, fast forward a bit to a really tragic event. The 1989 Jonesboro ambush. What was the Dundalk connection there?
Sadly, a very direct and damaging one. Two senior RUC officers, Chief Superintendent Harry Breen and Superintendent Bob Buchanan, were murdered by the Provisional IRA right after leaving Dundalk Garda Station. They'd been attending an informal cross-border security meeting there.
And the fallout from that, it was huge, wasn't it? With long-lasting consequences.
It really was. The Smithwick Tribunal investigated claims of collusion years later. Its report in 2013 concluded that, on balance, it was likely that sensitive information about the RUC officer's visit had been leaked from within Dundalk Garda Station to the IRA, enabling the ambush. That finding, as you can imagine, had a massive negative impact on the station, Garda morale, public trust, and already fragile cross-border police relations. It's a very stark illustration of the dangers and complexities of policing the border during the conflict.
And even after the main conflict ended, the challenges didn't just vanish, did they, for policing in that area?
Tragically, no. The murder of Detective Garda Adrian Donahoe in January 2013, he was based at Dundalk Station, was just horrific. He was shot and killed during a robbery at Lordship Credit Union. It's a terrible reminder of the ongoing dangers from organized crime, even post-Troubles.
That must have been absolutely devastating for his colleagues and the whole community. What was the wider impact beyond the immediate shock?
It was profound. It really hammered home that even if the threat shifts, you know, from political violence more towards organized crime, the risks for Gardai are still incredibly real.
Mm.
And the investigation into Detective Donahoe's murder, that became a huge international effort, didn't it?
It did, yeah. Massive cooperation needed with police in the U.S. and Australia as suspects had fled abroad. It really shows how serious crime in the border area works now, often across international borders.
It's a long way from those strained cross-border relationships you mentioned earlier. So how has that cooperation evolved more recently in a more positive way? Yes. Thankfully, despite the past difficulties, there's been a huge positive shift in cross-border cooperation. and Dundalk Garda Station and the whole Left Kevin Monaghan division are right at the heart of it now. A key example is the Joint Agency Task Force, the JATF. That brings together the Gardaí, the PSNI from Northern Ireland, and other agencies from both sides.
What sort of things does the JATF do? You mentioned tackling different cross-border crimes. Like, how would they tackle something like, say, rural crime better together than apart?
Well, for instance, they run things like high-visibility joint checkpoints. That alone can deter criminals trying to use the border. But they also bring in lots of different specialists for coordinated operations, Garda air support, armed support units, immigration officials, customs, even people from social protection. So for rural crime, maybe theft of farm machinery, they can share intelligence instantly across the border, coordinate patrols, check vehicles using combined resources. It makes it much harder for criminals to operate across that jurisdictional line. They target everything from that kind of rural crime to human trafficking. It's this multi-agency cross-border approach that allows for much better results. It's a really significant and welcome change towards tackling shared problems together.
That's a really powerful example of building cooperation after difficult times. Okay, so as we wrap up this deep dive on Dundalk Garda Station, what are the main takeaways for you?
For me, it's just how incredibly this one building story mirrors Ireland's bigger story. You know, from being a jail in the 19th century to a Garda station now, it's seen independence, conflict, and the move towards modern challenges. The actual repurposing of the building from confinement to law enforcement, that feels hugely symbolic in itself.
Absolutely. And it really highlights the crucial role Dundalk Garda Station has played and still plays for the local community, yes, but also for national security, for that cross-border work. And you feel a real respect for the Gardaí who've served there, their resilience through some incredibly tough times.
Indeed. Which leads us to a final thought, maybe for you, the listener. Think about that repurposing jail to Garda Station. Does that reflect a bigger shift in how society thinks about justice, about security? And maybe look around your own area. What other ordinary-looking buildings might have these rich, hidden histories that tell us something important about where we've come from? Worth thinking about, isn't it? The stories all around us.